On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
Today is, of course, a day when the families and the survivors of those awful events will be remembering and gathering to remember those who they lost. One of the people who has been at the forefront of the campaign for justice for those who died in the fire is Antoinette Keegan, who lost her two sisters in that fire. We spoke to her before she came on air this morning. There's a busy program of events, so she agreed to come on to us before all of that kicked off. And I started by asking her for her reflections on the passage of time since.
It doesn't even seem like 41 years. It seems like it only happened yesterday in my eyes and a lot of other families' eyes, because we've never moved forward. We haven't even had time to grieve. It's been battle after battle, right, trying to get justice for our loved ones. And today is a very special day. We are praying today, right, that this year will be our year that we will get truth and justice.
You have thought now for a couple of years that there was going to be a final turning point. It's nearly 2 years now since the Attorney General granted your request for fresh inquests. This much later, even with some COVID interruptions aside, you've run up against roadblock after roadblock.
We have, yeah. But this has been our life. From 1981, there's been obstacle after obstacle, always put in our way. But we never gave up, and we continued to fight for our loved ones, for justice for the 48. And we'll continue every step of the way, because they haven't got a voice. We're their voice, and we'll speak for them, and we'll get them the right to life and vindicate them, right, which we've already done. We've gotten the arson removed, that they were not arsonists. They went to their graves for 27 years, branded arsonists, as each and everybody that was in that building that night was all blamed on causing the fire.
For those who haven't been keeping up to speed with the various developments that have been underway in your quest for a full inquest, we might just take things one at a time. So firstly, there was the whole question mark around a venue to hold it, and there was a tender, and the RDS had been rented as the venue, but that tender is due to lapse in a couple of weeks, and as I understand it, there's no new home for the inquest yet. Is that right?
We have a new venue now. It was confirmed to us last Wednesday. We're actually in the Rotunda, which is actually ideal for everybody. It's central, so people from families that will be travelling from Belfast will be able to travel by commute. They'll be able to get the train down, and they're in city centre, so it suits almost everybody, like north side, south side, nationwide.
Great. Well, that's good progress to have. Do you know how long that they've got the use of the venue for?
We don't know, but I believe, right, it's there for the duration of the length of time that the inquest is going to go on.
Okay, so it's a definite, it's as long as it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
yeah.
I suppose the concern was, or what I was going to suggest was that because you might have thought the same about the RDS when that was first agreed as a venue, but now you find yourselves running up against its original expiry date and things haven't actually got underway at all.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Well, we actually didn't even know it was only leased for a year because, like, with the COVID and everything else, we understood, right, that was there. But it suits us now that we're not in the RDS, because it was actually a place out of the way to get to.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. That great hall in the Rotunda Hospital is definitely an ideal spot in terms of accessibility. The other issue that you have, and this is something which I think is still maybe going to need a bit more time to get over, is the question mark around a payment for an inquest, because usually juries at inquests wouldn't be paid, but usually juries at inquests don't need to serve for very long. But obviously, in this instance, with 48 fatalities to go through, this would be a very long-running case.
Yeah, well, that's another issue that we have to resolve. And we've resolved the legal aid, right, because the majority of the families wouldn't have been entitled to the legal aid on the inquest, which would have meant that they would have had to pay. So we've resolved that through the Oireachtas and the Shannon. That was all agreed, right? The regulations would change to suit this inquest. So I'm pretty sure, right, the Minister of Justice and the Taoiseach will make some sort of resolvement in the sense, right, that they can actually do this on this one occasion, because it is the biggest inquest in the history of the state. They can dot the I, cross the T, and for an exception, make one for, like, that the jury that will be selected will not be out of pocket, because this inquest could go on for 4 months, could go on for 6 months, could go on for 8 months. And at this time and age, right, nobody can afford to be sitting on a jury without any income. So we have, they have to understand, right, that with the times that, that's in it, we're all living through hard times, that it, it, an exception has to be made.
And obviously you're looking for an exception to be made, and you sound fairly confident that an exception will be made.
Exactly. Like, it is the biggest inquest in the history of the state. So, like, there can be a regulation done to, like, to make this work for a jury to be picked and to sit on it. Like, we need a jury, and exceptions have to be made.
Mm. Well, I don't mean to be a pessimist or to try and sort of talk it down, but I suppose you've had so many different roadblocks before that people might wonder how you'd find the optimism to think that there'll be a short-term fix in this case as well.
Well, that's true. Yeah, we've had nothing but obstacles thrown in our way every time we thought we were nearly there. But I'm sure, pretty sure, and fairly certain, right, that somewhere along the line, right, that the Taoiseach and the Minister of Justice can do something. They can actually agree on some sort of a system, right, that can be put in place, right, that the jury can be, like, paid while they're sitting on this.
You lost your two sisters, Mary and Martina, in the fire on Valentine's Day 1981. They would now be aged 60 and 57. It's an extraordinary length of time for you to have to go through to try and find some sort of real, legitimate answers as to what happened to them that night.
It is, yeah. Like, and we've missed out on, like, a lot of years with my sisters, Mary and Martina. Like, we've spoke quite often about them, like, that they would have been possibly married and having children and grandchildren. And, like, these are all the things, like, that we talk about. Like Martina was beautiful, so was Mary. The two of them are absolutely stunning. And they had our whole life whipped away from in the middle of the night. Just everything gone, right? And we woke up the next morning when I was in hospital. I didn't even know for 2.5 weeks that they were dead. And my mother and father, God rest the two of them, they went through heartache, just like all the other families. Like, nobody ever expected this to ever happen. And, like, when we were going out, enjoy ourselves, but, like, for them to be in a coffin and my mother and father in the morgue and ask, can I want to see them? And they were told, no, better off remember them the way they were. Because they were both unidentified. Mary was only identified by her necklace, and Martina was only identified by her two rings. She had a signet ring on with MK, Martina Keegan, and a clatter ring, which I wear all the time.
It's an awful way for your parents to have had to deal with all of that in
the
circumstances.
Yeah,
that
no, but, like, the stardust actually ripped families apart. They left us devastated, emotionally, like, drained, and, like, it just ripped families apart. Like, blaming one another, right? You let them go, and your fault. Like, my father, Lord mercy, he wasn't a dancer. My mother was. She'd won all the driving competitions years ago with Freddie Duffy. And my father would be saying to me, "Mom, they took after you. You were the dancer." My mother said, "I didn't kill them. They were my children." Like, it caused more trouble in every home. Like, families that can tell the stories of their loved ones, right? They can actually say, like, you know, that there was more arguments. But we grew up in a very happy home. And there was always fun and laughter in it. But it went from fun and laughter to crying all the time.
Mm. And a lot of people will, of course, be familiar, and they'll have memories of your mother, Christine, who you lost a couple of years ago, who had been a very tireless campaigner to try and get some answers as to what happened that night. Today, of course, is the day before the anniversary itself, but today is a day in which you're having a few events to mark the anniversary.
Yeah, we're going to have a special mass at 11:30 this morning in St. Joseph's Church on Greencastle Road. That will be followed then by a wreath being laid in the Stardust Memorial Park, which is another thing that my mother had to fight for the victims to get a park there in remembrance of them. So we'll be laying the wreath in the Stardust Memorial Park. And then at 1:00 then, we're going to have a candlelight vigil. Charlie Bird is going to present each family with a candle with their name wrote on it. And they're going to say a few words. Then after that, Christy Moore is going to sing the song, "They Never Came Home." Then we'll have, like, a father that lost his only child, he'll be reading that poem, and a brother that lost his sister, he'll be reading that poem. That'll all be followed then by a presentation to people that were very special to us along the way, along with the journey. And then after that then, all the families will stand in front of the supporters and that people have come to the candlelight vigil. We'll unveil a big banner then. It's 30 foot long, and it just says on the top of it, "They never came home, and every victim's photograph going right along the whole of it. At that time then we play You'll Never Walk Alone. On the count of 48 seconds then, right, when the song is over, the firemen will let the sirens off and that will conclude the candlelight vigil.
It sounds like it's going to be a very emotional day. I think I probably speak for all of our listeners this lunchtime when I say that I hope that it will be the last time that you have to go through a day like this without having some answers as to what
happened. Well, we'll always have the candlelight vigil in remembrance of our loved ones, but today, like, it's going to be very special because we are praying today, right, that this is our year. This is when we get the verdict and we get the inquest done and we know how our loved ones died and why they died. So this is a very, very special candlelight vigil today. We're praying to God above and to all the spirits up there, our mothers and fathers that have passed away. We're praying for the 48 that they will get justice this year.
Antoinette Keegan, who lost her two sisters, Mary and Martina, in the Stardust Fire 41 years ago, speaking to me a little bit earlier. We are very grateful to her for having spoken today with such dignity and such poise about something which is still so raw for her and for the other families of those who lost their lives in Stardust so long ago.